Welcome to today's edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to feature reports, I'll bring you a look at regional and national agricultural news. And the show starts with a look at California agricultural news. The Department of Justice, on behalf of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the Attorney General of California, on behalf of the San Francisco Bay Regional Water Quality Control Board, have filed a civil complaint in federal court against the City and County of San Francisco for claims of Clean Water Act violations spanning the last decade. The complaint seeks financial penalties and improvements to remedy San Francisco's repeated and widespread failures to operate its two combined sewer systems and three sewage treatment plants in compliance with the Clean Water Act and its permits. San Francisco failed to operate its combined sewer systems in a manner that keeps untreated sewage out of the San Francisco Bay and its tributaries, streets, beaches, and other areas with risk of human contact. Protecting San Francisco Bay, the Pacific Ocean, and public health are critical priorities for EPA, and this complaint is a major step to improve how the San Francisco sewer system is managed, according to EPA Pacific Southwest Regional Administrator Martha Guzman. She says EPA and their partners are committed to ensuring San Francisco comes into compliance with the Clean Water Act to protect clean water and local communities. Nature's Sweet, the largest vertically integrated controlled environment agricultural company in North America and the number one snacking tomato brand, is applauding a recent decision by the United States Court of International Trade, which invalidated a 2019 determination by the United States Department of Commerce that exporters of fresh tomatoes had dumped product into the U.S. from Mexico, requiring Commerce to reconsider whether dumping actually occurred, and if so, what duty rates apply. U.S. buyers and importers are pleased that the court determined Commerce may not apply steep duties of more than 30% on imports of Mexican tomatoes in the United States. The court decision is straightforward and clear, according to Skip Hollett, Vice President and General Counsel for Nature Sweet. The court did, in fact, rule that the Commerce's final determination was not in accordance with the new law and therefore invalid. The court clearly stated that Commerce's final investigation, in which it selected entirely new parties for individual examination and examined sales from a wholly new period of time, violated the basic statutory requirement that Commerce resume and finish its original investigation from 1995. Contrary to the Florida Tomato Exchange's recent bluster, this is not a procedural decision. The court invalidated Commerce's final determination as unlawful and told Commerce to redo its investigation. Therefore, there has been no final determination that dumping has occurred at any time. In fact, based on the shortages that occurred this past winter, with accompanying record high prices charged in the United States, the evidence continues to indicate that Mexican tomatoes are not being dumped and are critical to feeding American families. The strong supply of avocados from California comes as the state hit its peak availability of the fruit. Promotable volume is expected to continue through the July 4th holiday period, and they begin to slowly taper off, according to Terry Splain, Vice President of Marketing for the California Avocado Commission. While a mid-season forecast on the timing of the season and the overall volume is expected at the end of the month, early reports indicate the state's avocado supply is projected to be around the same as last year in May and June. It's expected that promotable volume will continue through the July 4th holiday period and then begin to slowly wind down after August. With American summer holidays like Memorial Day, Flag Day, and Independence Day, now is an excellent time for retailers to include locally grown and sustainably farmed California avocados in their patriotic promotions, according to Splain. What is different this season is movement and demand, which are strong. Demand in April was quite strong, and a percentage of the crop that has been harvested this year is ahead of last year. About 25% of the California avocado crop has been picked, according to Splain, adding that overall market conditions did encourage harvesting in April, conditions that CAC hopes will continue to be favorable. To help further movement, the association's new consumer advertising campaign called What's Inside a California Avocado focuses on locally grown and sustainably farmed fruit. For our brand, we need to ensure our targeted consumers not only want to buy avocados, but that they are aware of what differentiates California avocados and when and where they are available to purchase, according to Splain. That means leaning into the message that California avocados are not only locally grown, but also ethically sourced and farmed using environmentally friendly farming practices. The campaign will also include more customized promotion support with retailers and food service operators. There's an optimistic outlook on this year's California fig crop. They're having wonderful weather in California, and they've had another really good year of rain and snowpack, so it's shaping up to be a good year, according to Eric Herman of the Specialty Crop Company. To start, the season looks to be back to a more historic start on timing. That's different from last year, which saw a 10-day to 2-week delay to the beginning of harvest. Herman says this year the first Brayba crop on Black Mission figs should start in early June and go through the month, while the second and main crop of brown turkey figs will begin in the middle of July and harvest should go into November. They've made it through the frost season, so they'll have normal to good numbers of figs available. The specialty crop company itself, which also grows brown turkey, Sierra, and tiger figs, has also planted quite a few more fig acres, and some of those trees are coming online this year for fresh figs and processing figs as well. As for demand, while each variety has its consumers who prefer it, generally fresh fig demand, even through the peak of COVID years, continues to grow. Meanwhile, pricing should be similar to slightly more this year on figs. It may be a little more because they had another wage increase in California, and other inputs are also increasing, according to Herman. In a notable move within the food and beverage industry, SunSweet Growers Incorporated has announced a significant change in its leadership. Brad Schuler, a highly accomplished veteran of the company, has been elevated to the role of Chief Executive Officer. The promotion marks a pivotal moment for SunSweet as it nears its 110th anniversary and seeks to aggressively widen the margin of its position as the world's premier dried fruit brand. Schuler's ascent to CEO reflects an impressive 20-year tenure at SunSweet, where he demonstrated exceptional leadership qualities and mastered the intricacies of SunSweet's global business, according to the company. In the near term, Schuler states his focus will be continued reinvestment in the state-of-the-art production assets, migration towards new enterprise software with cutting-edge AI capabilities, and organizational training to effectively utilize these new tools towards a vision of relentlessly building SunSweet's global brand. And since we're talking about company staff changes, Ocean Mist Farms, a leading grower, shipper of fresh artichokes in North America, has hired a new chief financial officer, Tim Wolfe of Petaluma, California. With over 2 decades of experience in fresh produce, including agriculture, aquaculture, and food service, Wolfe brings with him a well-rounded set of skills and experience to help drive the now century-old and ever-evolving company into the future, according to company information. Former positions have included roles at Dole Food Company in Salinas, Performance Food Group out of Santa Cruz, and most recently with Hog Island Oyster Company in Marshall, where Wolfe served as CFO since 2018. His experience ranges from developing financial plans, forecasting and budgeting, to strategic planning and creating and analyzing KPIs to drive growth and meet predetermined objectives, according to Ocean Mist.
Early registration for the 2024 Crop Consultant Conference, hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and Western Region Certified Crop Advisors, is now open. The popular event for certified crop advisors, pest control advisors, grower applicators, and industry professionals is the mainstay for all continuing education needs this year and will take place on September 25th and 26th at the Visalia Convention Center. Visit myaglife.com/events for the early discounted rate of $275 per person, which includes the live conference, a trade show with 70-plus exhibits, first-class dining, entertainment, and a mixer. We'll see you there.
Many home gardeners have learned the benefits of using worms to help decompose food waste and produce compost, a system known as vermicomposting. An increasing number of wineries, food processors, and dairies have turned to a similar process of using worms to treat wastewater, but on a much larger scale. Biofiltro, based in Davis, is leading the charge, and the company's sales engineer, Sarah Hout, recently showed off a long-standing system at Peltier Winery in Lodi. Biofiltro has developed its patented biodynamic aerobic system built around California redworms.
So we are the only large-scale vermifiltration company. And so when I say vermifiltration, it's a term we're trying to get to catch on. But, you know, a lot of people know what vermicomposting is. We are taking similar idea, but using it to filter wastewaters. So all different industries, sanitary domestic wastewater, food processors, beverage processors like wineries, liquid manure from dairy and hog facilities. And we are putting that through our worm beds, removing all of those constituents of concern, BOD, total suspended solids, total nitrogen, outflows clean water for irrigation reuse. So the only things coming out of our system are clean water and vermicompost, which can then be applied to the soil or the crop or the vineyard.
Peltier Winery, which is certified sustainable under the Lodi Rules Program, has been a proponent of earth-friendly practices for years. Originally, the winery used an aeration pond to treat its processed water, but Hout said occasional odors coming from the pond didn't mesh well with the nearby tasting room. So the winery worked with Biofiltro in 2017 to install a 3,000-square-foot worm treatment system. It is designed to handle 10,000 gallons of processed wastewater per day, and that's sized based on peak water use.
So here at Peltier, they're one of our early adopters, so I'm always so proud to show off their system. So in 2017, they had an existing pond aeration system, and they were having issues with odors. So they had some complaints from their tasting room, so they were really motivated to remove that. They learned about Biofiltro. They are doing lots of natural regenerative practices here at their winery, and so they just got it. They understood. So they are treating about 10,000 gallons per day of their winery process water, and it's going through 3,000 square feet of worm beds and then reusing all of that water for vineyard irrigation.
Hout said one of the nice things about its system is they're relatively low tech. They consist of 3 to 4 feet of wood chips on top of a mesh screen, a gravel layer, another screen, and plastic pallets on the bottom. This allows the wastewater to be sprayed on the top and filter through the substrate. In the process, thousands and thousands of worms feed on the wastewater. As part of the food web, beneficial microbes feed on the worm excrement. The result is water which has had at least 85% of its total dissolved solids and biochemical demand removed. All this occurs in as few as 4 hours.
Low tech. You saw we walked through the system. It is really easy to wrap your head around it. Maintenance items, we encourage people to look at the system every day, you know, unclog sprinkler heads. So over the surface of the worm beds is sprinklers that spray the wastewater over the top. Those might get clogged, so go look at it, unclog those if you need to. Tilling the system, so breaking up any solids that accumulate on the top. They do that about once a month. And then the big maintenance item is essentially replacing the, I call it the filter. So it's about 3 feet of worm beds, 3 feet deep. And so every 2 to 3 years, they go and they manually remove all of that material, set aside some of their worm-rich media, and then replenish their wood chips, which is the filter media, and then re-inoculate their own system with their own worms. The rest goes out into the vineyard.
Worms like a relatively neutral environment on the pH scale, but water coming out of wineries is typically much more acid because of grape juice and cleaning products. To address that, Hout said a programmable logic controller automatically adds buffering compound to the wastewater, adjusting the pH to about 6.5 before it is sprayed on top of the worm beds.
So we have a PLC, so a programmable logic controller, that is really the brains of the system. So everything is fully automated. Both Biofiltro and the client can see all of their data in real time, and this system will automatically pH adjust. And so some sort of caustic. I'm not sure what chemical they're actually using here. Probably potassium hydroxide is common because we're trying to get away from sodium in our soils. And so we will pH adjust up to about 6.5, and then coming out of the system, it'll go up a little bit and come out pretty neutral.
Keeping the system with the minimum amount of moving parts also means that it's more economical than some of the other wastewater treatment systems. That includes cost savings up front on the capital side and cost savings in operations. And Hout said it's also low energy, relying mostly on gravity feed.
It's low tech, it's regenerative, it's natural, it's really easy to wrap your head around it. You know, we're not free, but when you're comparing us to an aeration pond or a membrane bioreactor or a moving biofilm bioreactor, we're cheaper. We're more economical, both on the capital expenditure up front and then also on the operating expense. So we're really low energy. Using worms to aerate the system instead of big motors and blowers, as much gravity as we can use. We're cost effective. We're reusing the water. We are building the soil.
One of the end products of water treatment using worms is vermicompost. This is a mixture of the decomposed wood chips, soil nutrients produced by the beneficial microbes, and worm castings. Depending on the size of the operation, they may use the material on their own vineyards or fields. Or if they're large enough, Hout said they may sell it and create a new revenue stream.
like this system here at Peltier Winery. So they totally operate their own system. So I'm not sure what they do with the vermicompost out of their system. But if they were to sell it as a revenue stream or offset having to purchase their own compost or vermicompost for their vineyards, it's probably like a wash as far as that maintenance items. But for our larger systems, like our dairy clients, that's a new revenue stream. So these are really large systems. For example, our worm farm at Royal Dairy in Washington is over 300,000 square feet of worm beds. That is thousands of tons of vermicompost, and now that's an additional revenue stream for that farmer.
BioFiltro can size systems based on wastewater flow. For boutique wineries, it has developed small self-contained units built in 20-foot shipping containers. Think of them like worm-powered packaged water treatment plants. On the other end of the scale are massive operations like O'Neill Vintners and Distillers in Parlier. Built in 2020, O'Neill's system comprises 12 worm beds that occupy 5 acres. The system, which enlists more than 22 million California redworms, can handle up to 80 million gallons of wastewater per year.
It's significantly larger than Peltier. Peltier, our design is about 10,000 gallons per day, and that's in their peak harvest crush. O'Neill Vintners is over 1 million gallons per day in their peak crush, and they are also a distillery in addition to a winery. So more challenging wastewater in the sense that they are boiling when they are distilling and making liquors. So they lots of suspended solids in that, and we have to size the system based on the nutrient loading.
Once a BioFiltro system is up and running, clients have the option of taking over operations themselves or paying the company to continue to maintain it. O'Neill opted to do it themselves, and Hout described it as a huge success story.
So they have totally taken over in their own operations, which I love to hear because even at that scale, they are able to operate it themselves, and that's pretty awesome. And I tour that system. So I do sales and marketing for BioFiltro, so I take prospects to see that, especially our larger volume clients, and it's great.
This reporter can attest to the worm beds at Peltier not having any odor that might waft into the tasting room. In fact, the block wall construction surrounding the 3,000-square-foot worm bed blends into the winery's other production buildings. This is Vicki Boyd reporting from Peltier Winery for My Ag Life.
By partnering with JCS Marketing Incorporated, your company can achieve 3.5 million impressions to growers, consultants, and industry professionals annually. Our comprehensive media suite, which includes prestigious publications as well as dynamic websites, targeted emails, engaging podcasts, and premier trade shows, provides a strategic platform for targeting key decision makers. This approach can amplify your company's visibility to a specific audience and fosters meaningful connections, positioning your brand at the forefront of the agricultural community. Don't wait for success to come to you. Call our office today at 559-352-4456. That's 559-352-4456.
The USDA's Farm Service Agency is reminding agricultural producers that farm loan programs can be used to support a variety of climate smart practices. They include many practices that farmers already use, like cover cropping, nutrient management, and conservation tillage. Farmers and ranchers are already doing their part to be stewards of our land, but some may lack the financial resources to take their efforts to the next level, according to Farm Service Agency Administrator Zach Ducheneau. He says the Farm Service Agency offers a variety of loans that can help those who would like to explore opportunities and make a positive impact on our environment, he says. FSA loans can provide capital needed to invest in climate smart practices and equipment, including the establishment of rotational grazing systems, precision agriculture equipment, or machinery for conversion to no-till residue management. Climate smart ag practices generate significant benefits, including capturing and sequestering carbon. Now that both the House and the Senate have released their initial versions of a new farm bill, National Milk Producers Federation Senior Vice President of Member Services and Governance, Chris Galen, outlines the main differences between the two sets of framework.
One is that the USDA has a significant amount of new funding in the past couple of years through the Inflation Reduction Act to spend on what we call climate smart farming. And at least some of the Republicans have been interested in shifting some of the money for climate smart farming practices into supporting the commodity insurance titles. And so that's of greater interest, I think, to the Republicans than to the Democrats. The other issue has been nutrition funding. Let's remember that most of the money in these farm bills goes for feeding programs, not for farm programs. And so there's been some interest in shifting money out of nutrition or putting more limits on who qualifies for USDA food assistance. And that's a more appeal to people in one party than the other. So those, I think, are going to be sort of the flashpoint where hopefully cooler heads will prevail and they'll end up with compromise if we're going to get a bill done this year.
Galen explains that both bills contain additional support for the dairy title, and both bills support food processors using common food names. Galen says they are happy to have something for people to look at and not just farm bill rumors and hearsay. USDA Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack says the issue of possible compensation to dairy operations hit by avian influenza is a complex one. USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford.
Should dairy producers whose cows have gotten avian influenza be compensated for the loss of milk production from those cows, and if so, by how much? Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack told visiting farm broadcasters those indeed are hard questions to answer given the fairly small loss of milk production that we've seen. But
I think what is of greater interest to us in this question is there a residual impact and effect that is longstanding?
The cows seem to recover from the virus, but does their milk production recover, or does it remain 10 to 20% below normal? Obviously,
over the life of that cow, that's an issue.
But to make sure it's a real issue, it's actually happening, producers would need to share their records with USDA.
So it's important for us to be able to get with farmers, to be able to get the information that would allow us to make an informed decision about whether or not an indemnification program makes sense.
In Washington, Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
CropLife America welcomes its new CEO, Alex Dunn, who brings extensive expertise in local, state, and federal government affairs, particularly within environmental organizations, such as the Environmental Protection Agency, where she notably led the pesticide program. Dunn outlines key organizational objectives, starting with her short-term goals.
Some short-term goals are to get to know the fantastic staff that we have here at this organization. We have people that have been with us for, you know, over 15 years. And so I'm meeting everyone. I'm also getting to know the companies and really understanding how they play in the agricultural supply chain. And then I would say another short-term goal is getting to know the members of our grower advisory panel. We have a really exceptional group of growers.
And as for long-term goals?
And then longer-term goals are to be really relevant to the conversations around agriculture that are happening. So being where people need us and making sure we're bringing the right tools to the marketplace. And the only way we know that is by doing a lot of listening.
Their member companies produce, sell, and distribute virtually all the necessary and vital organic and non-organic pesticide and biotechnology products used by American farmers.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.